listening to Real World News.
Friends of the Earth press conference at the kickoff of the UN climate talks in Durban. Environmental Federation Friends of the Earth International, with 76 member groups around the world, expressed great concern over the developed countries' attempt to undermine the international framework under which these countries must reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. Friends of the Earth's warning comes at the beginning of the United Nations climate talks in South Africa, whilst the greenhouse gas emission targets in the current phase are extremely weak and full of dangerous loopholes like carbon trading. The protocol itself provides the only existing international framework for legally binding targets for developed countries to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, reads a press release published by Friends of the Earth International today. The text continues saying, rather than strengthen the emission targets and cut out the loopholes to galvanize real action on climate emissions, the US, Japan, Canada, and other developed countries are pushing to scrap the agreed legally binding framework to cut emissions and replace it with a voluntary pledge and review approach. Friends of the Earth International also held a press conference on Monday at the Media Center of the Durban International Conference Center, where the UN official negotiations on climate change began. Friends of the Earth International's chair, Nimo Basi, and the representatives of Friends of the Earth Malaysia, Brazil, and South Africa, Mina Raman, Lucy Ortiz, and Bobby Pick, respectively, participated as speakers.
COP 17 is a very significant moment in the struggle to save the planet, to save the people. And it's very significant also that this conference is taking place in Africa. Africa is the worst hit, besides the small island states, when it comes to global warming issue. The impacts are already manifesting on the continent, so we are not speaking of what may happen in 5 years or 10 years. We are talking about what is going on right now. We're speaking about droughts and famines on the continent, thousands of people displaced from their ancestral homes, living in refugee camps. We're talking about environmental refugees, climate environmental refugees already on the continent. We're talking about floods. We're talking about crop failures, desertification, mudslides. Floods not just in Africa, floods in places like Pakistan, where huge tracts of land have been submerged. To mudslides in Latin America, bushfires in Russia. In other words, climate change is a planetary crisis. It's not just a challenge that confronts a few vulnerable people in poor countries. It is a challenge to the whole planet and to every single person. And we're so disappointed that countries like Japan, like Canada, Australia, and Russia will join on this train. The crisis that is confronting the planet is something that every nation should confront with all seriousness, because we have just one planet. It doesn't matter how rich a nation is, how much space exploration a nation has conducted. We have one planet Earth, as far as we know right now. And we have all the responsibility to take real actions, because millions of people are really at risk.
Actually, people are really doing a lot that they can do to combat global warming and to secure their survival. But the major challenge is that even when we talk about adaptation, it's patently unjust to force me to adapt to an increasing level of degradation being perpetrated by the same set of people, by the same kind of, the same nations, and the same polluting industry. So the reason why we are here, part of the reason we are here, is to stand together with the teeming voices outside, and also to speak to the delegations right here, that look, the level of impact that people are being confronted with is far beyond what individuals can handle. And so we need collective action from countries, especially direct emissions cut from rich, polluting nations. And in Friends of the Earth International, we don't only mobilize just to resist. We are working with grassroots organizations and communities on real alternative actions to transform from what we are doing now to work and secure our future.
One of the key issues for determination in Durban will actually be whether the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol commitments would be met by the parties who are parties to the Kyoto Protocol, whether they will do this without any conditions. And I think this is the most important outcome. If at all there is an outcome, that's what we want and that's what we demand. However, what we see happening is that this will not be likely, because the Annex 1 parties to the parties to the Kyoto Protocol are conditioning that they will only make the second commitment period commitments if there is another legally binding treaty under the convention. And in fact, I just came from the opening ceremony. I must say that I was very concerned by the speech of the COP president herself of South Africa, and also the speech of Ms. Cristiana Figueres, who are now actually framing the discourse that the outcome of the KP will depend on the outcome of what happens in the convention. When this was not the case when the negotiations in Bali were launched, and both of them did not refer to the Bali Action Plan at all, or the Bali Roadmap. There is a great escape by the parties to the Kyoto Protocol who do not want to make the further commitments. And as Nimo has already mentioned, the Cancun pledges are exceptionally low and there's no increase in the ambition. And what they are saying, the EU, for instance, is saying that we will not do anything unless we see a commitment to a new mandate coming out of Durban. So you will hear this thing about a new Durban mandate. And the US is renegating on historical responsibility. They do not want to acknowledge historical responsibility. So does the EU. They do not refer to historical responsibility. So you have historical responsibility being wiped out. You have the difference between Annex 1 and non-Annex 1 removed. The common but differentiated principle in the convention being rewritten. So what do you have? You have a rewriting of the convention and a rewriting of the protocol. But when you sit in those rooms and you hear about this new treaty that has to come into place, you think that it is about an ambitious treaty. But Cancun has already shown that the US and other countries, including Australia and Canada and Russia and Japan, have no intention of having high ambition. What they are talking about is pledge and review. We pledge what we want to do, and then we can sit and talk. It's not based on a top-down, science-based, equity-based approach where developed countries must take the targets and aggregate targets based on what science demands and what equity demands. And that is really planetary emergency and planetary suicide, and the new treaty is not ambitious as it's being projected to be. And this is why many of us are saying, look at the content before you decide the form.
What do we see? We see the dominance of vested interests in the promotion of false solution of carbon markets and its expansion through new market mechanisms, what is unacceptable. Carbon markets are already crashing in the real world along with the financial system. And carbon markets should be called the avoided responsibility mechanism. Their offsetting approach is a way to outsource supposed reduction in emissions from developing countries while burning them with more dirty energy and dirty projects like agrofuels, dams, waste incineration, plantations, and even coal and gas flaring. When risking not to have here in Durban a commitment with meaningful targets, countries want to keep their clean development mechanism and expand these bad experiences to new market mechanisms, no more only in projects, but also in whole sectoral areas, and also in soil carbon, grabbing lands and grabbing agriculture also into the market. While there is no public money from developed countries to commit to protect forests as a mitigation measure in developing countries, red mechanisms are becoming another space for carbon markets. RED is being designed in a way that funding for projects will come from sale of emission reductions credits on carbon markets for the benefit of polluters in the Baltic countries. RED fever is already creating conflicts in developing countries, while structural adjustment in land and forest domestic laws are being made to pave the way for RED to be, in the near future, the biggest offset mechanism, in a way that will delay us to move out from fossil fuels and increase corporate control over forests and people's land. And there is also a proposal for the private sector facility under the Global Green Fund and more carbon markets in the financial climate sector. The Global Climate Fund, the Green Climate Fund, should be operationalized here, restricting, if not excluding totally, the role of the World Bank, with no private sector window and no role for carbon markets to source it. The fund should be public, additional, and come from developed countries in line with their historical responsibility.
Well, in terms of South Africa faces a very challenging scenario. While they recognize in the Climate South African White Paper that it is critical to keep the temperature below 2 degrees Celsius, they somehow don't believe that they can actually do this. And so while they say that in the White Paper, what we have is a South African government pushing false technologies like nuclear power stations, proposing new coal-to-liquid plants, proposing new oil refineries, allowing for the fracking of gas, both in this province and in the Karoo, allowing for the drilling of oil off the South African coast, and at the same time making sure that they increase their coal-fired power stations by getting loans from the World Bank, as you know, $3.75 billion from the World Bank to ensure that electricity is continually produced cheaply for big companies such as BHP Billiton. We use up to 10 to 11% of all our electricity, but only employ around 3,000 workers. So the South African government position and the South African developmental scenario generally is quite flawed and problematic.
You are listening to Real World News.